walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Nancy Mura. With all the bird action, I forgot to double check the pronunciation. Mura? Okay. So, the CEO of the Raptor Center of Tampa Bay, which is dedicated to the rehabilitation of injured raptors and other wildlife in the Tampa Bay area. This conversation is pegged to the Wonders of Wildlife Festival taking place March 23rd at E.G. Simmons Park in Ruskin. The festival, this will be its first year, will offer an array of hands-on activities, educational programs, animal shows, and exhibits that seek to be, in the words of some promotional material, fun and educational for the whole family. Proceeds from the festival will be earmarked for the Raptor Center's campaign to build a wildlife rehabilitation facility. We'll hear about the center's efforts in rescue and rehabilitation, some specifics about the festival, and Nancy brought Matilda the hawk, so we'll meet her and see her. We're streaming the interview on Facebook Live. It's on my personal page, that is Duncan Strauss on Facebook, so you can access that by your phone or other device. You can watch the interview and see Matilda, who is fantastic looking. So we'll get to our conversation with Nancy and all those other things in just a moment or two here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Later in the show, I'll speak with Susanna Arneson, Director of Development at the Humane Society of the Nature Coast. They have essentially run out of space to accommodate all the animals they want to help, so they have a campaign underway to finance the expansion of their facilities and have a big fundraising event happening on March 28th. We'll hear more about all of that just a bit later. Lastly, a program, you know, next week I won't be here. I'll be spring breaking it up with my son. But the great news is that Bev Capshaw will be hosting the show in my absence, so that's always great. Right now, though, let's get to Nancy with the reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing DJ at WMNF.org, or texting 813-433-0885. And with a further reminder that we are streaming again this interview on Facebook Live on my personal page, Duncan Strauss, so you can see Matilda and Nancy, and what it's worth me, on Talking Animals on WMNF. Welcome, Nancy and Matilda.
Hello.
So you're going to have to probably step a little, a little closer just so we can hear you loud and clear. Welcome. Thank you for coming. Thank you for bringing Matilda, who, again, is a majestic-looking bird. I guess maybe they all are, but seeing one that up close is kind of hard not to be struck.
Yeah, she's a red-tailed hawk, and she's one of the larger hawks we have in the area. So she's a beautiful bird. Matilda, unfortunately, was shot. And that's her disability. All birds of prey that you see in captivity do have some type of disability.
Obviously, in that case, when they're shot, or I guess depending on where and how they're shot, the rehabilitation only goes so far, and whereas other things maybe that you encounter, they get rehabilitated and they can be released back?
That's correct. Our goal always is to release the animals back into the wild.
All right, we'll circle back to that in a sec. But let's start at the remedial level, at least for me. What exactly is a raptor?
A raptor is, the word raptor comes from the French word repair or seize, which means to grab with their feet. Majority of birds of prey do kill their prey with their feet.
Wow.
So their strength is in their feet and their talons. They have these awesome-looking beaks, and a lot of people always ask me, have you ever been bit by one? And yes, I have. Have you ever been grabbed by one? And certainly the worst of the two, the feet, as I always say, have you ever been footed by a red-tailed hawk? There'll be no doubt in your mind it could kill something with its feet.
Wow.
Very, very strong feet.
So everything across the whole raptor family, if there is such a thing, it's all done by the feet.
Right. And it's, frequently people would refer to them as birds of prey.
Right. And the prey typically is what?
The prey for the majority of hawks in our area are rats and mice.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them they'll eat snakes, they'll eat frogs. Some of them occasionally will eat a small fish. But rodents are predominantly their food source.
Yeah. Why do I think some birds, maybe it's mostly just eagles now that I think about it, but really like fish or salmon in particular, am I confusing them with something else?
Our eagles that we have are bald eagles, and mm-hmm. they are in the classification of fish eagle. And so they are a bird that eats 70% fish and about 30% mammals. Of course, we have all the osprey in the area that are just fish eaters.
Yeah. So in terms of the prey that the more conventional raptors eat, is it always alive?
In general, it is. Vultures are also considered birds of prey, although those of us who work with birds of prey, they're very, very different than hawks or eagles or falcons. Vultures typically, we know them as nature's garbage men. and so they eat prey that's dead. But your hawks and falcons predominantly and eagles prefer live prey.
Okay, but it sounds like it's a preference, but hey, if I'm hungry and I see something sitting there, I might just go ahead and go.
Especially when you mention eagles. Eagles are opportunist feeders. So I always laugh. I say, eagle would much rather steal a fish from an osprey than catch one himself.
Okay. Makes sense in some ways.
No, he doesn't have to get wet. It takes a lot of energy to go in
sure.
the water. The osprey doesn't
You're
seem
doing
to mind
the work
doing
for
it.
Me. Yeah, why not? Okay, so I think you've alluded to some of these. So what would be the traits that make a raptor in particular? I mean, obviously the feet are essentially what we've already
not
learned.
Not only the feet, the sharp talons, their hooked beak. They all have a hooked beak. They have phenomenal eyesight, and they can hear about as well as we can. They're hearing for hawks and falcons is not tremendous. Owls, on the other hand, pretty much hunt by sound. So your birds of prey that are hunting during total darkness are hunting by sound. Barn owls, which we do have in the area, arguably could be the best hearing animal on the planet.
Really?
So it can hear a mouse under the surface of the ground almost a mile in the air.
Now, that's fascinating, and already yet another thing I didn't know. How do we learn that? How did we learn that the owl's hearing is maybe superior to any creature's?
Well, it's certainly studies done throughout time, studies done recently at Cornell University, along with some other scientists, have actually measured the sound in terms of the sound waves and looked at everything from a pigeon to a falcon and then the barn owl. And the smaller birds, you certainly can see the register of the flapping of their wings on the sound wave. When the barn owl flies, there's virtually no sound at all. And that's in a soundproof studio.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's some video that's on it that you can see where the barn owl actually does fly and no sound whatsoever. And certainly nature's best rodent control. You know, the owls who hunt the same territory that the hawks are hunting during the day. So 24 hours a day, you have coverage for rodents.
So are they competing in a sense, or are they approaching it so differently that there's not really a potential for conflict?
They do compete to some extent, and right now we have baby great horned owls out in nature, and the great horned owl is the flying tiger. It is the top of the food chain when it comes to birds. It has 500 pounds of gripping strength in its talons, and it will take a bald eagle chick out of a nest.
One
fact that a lot of people don't know is owls do not build their own nest. No owl does. They steal nests from other birds. So not uncommon to see a great horned owl in an osprey platform or in a nest that maybe once upon a time had eagles in it. So they have to steal their nest. They actually do not build a nest.
You know, I think I had known that they would sometimes take over a nest, but I guess I didn't realize yet again, another thing already, we're only 5 minutes in. I got to keep track of all my new details here, but that they never build a nest.
They typically do not. In this area, we have screech owls that nest in tree cavities. They might nest in your attic if they could get in there. But they also like to nest. They're a bird that nests in boxes. And the barn owls, B-A-R-N, barn owls, mm-hmm. they like to nest on a flat surface. So, and they're not territorial. So they, if the food supply is plentiful, they will nest together. But they like to nest on a flat surface. So again, a bird that benefits from a box. Your great horned owls typically will take nests from hawks and nest right out in the open. And then the other owl we have prevalent in this area is the burrowing owl. Not in Hillsborough County, but certainly a little south of us, but adorable little owls that have a tendency to use gopher tortoise burrows for their home.
So are owls then just don't have the instinct or whatever it would take to be inclined to make nests, or just they figured out a way that, like, I don't need to make a nest. I could take this guy's nest, or I can sit in this box, or I can do...
Yeah, just over time, they traditionally have never built nests. I'm not 100% sure, you know, what the reason is. They certainly can carry things.
Right,
But they don't, you know, they don't have that instinct to carry sticks and weave them into a nest like an eagle or a hawk would.
Interesting. So what are the raptors that someone, if so inclined, would train? Is that always called falconry, by the way?
Well, it's all stems from falconry. And that, as they say, the sport of kings, you know, we were hunting with birds of prey long before people figured out how to make guns. And they figured out that if they took these birds out of the nest at a very small age and taught them basically to live, you know, very close with them and use falconry. The anklets and the jesses that she has on, that's falconry. Her hood that she was wearing when she came in is falconry. And so that piece of it, falconry. And falconry is hunting with birds of prey.
Now, is she upset or is she just...
She's just moving.
Because before we went on air, you said actually she's relaxing into it, which made me feel better.
Yeah, she's just, you know,
checking out her environment.
Bored. She's like, why are we sitting here for this long?
I got bad news for him, Matilda. We have a little more time to sit here and be bored. But so regardless of the bird in question, it is referred to as falconry. So
it is referred to as falconry when you hunt with birds of prey.
Okay.
Matilda is what's considered an educational ambassador.
Okay.
So she is, we always say with these birds, they are trained. They're not tame. If I messed with her, she would grab me. If I aggravated her, she would bite me. I can tell you she never has. And that's one of the considerations when we bring a bird in to rehab. Our goal is always to get it back out in the wild. But for this bird in particular, she has a huge gap if you watch her wings.
Yeah,
she
it's quite a
span.
She has
a huge gap in her wing. And she has pellets in that wing. She also has pellets in the other wing. So when we started to work with her and realized that she wasn't going to be releasable, she was treated by the vets at Busch Gardens, our animal care center. They do treat our birds for free. And we started to work with her, and we noticed that she was a very mellow bird. Mm-hmm. She took well to us holding her and handling her. She had to have her bandage changed every other day and physical therapy on her wing for almost 4 months.
Oh, wow.
But she was able to retain the end of her wing. You know, that's a problem. But when we're actually assessing birds, you have to look at them and say, are they going to be happy in captivity? She is, needless to say, not as happy as she would be in the wild, but she's content, you know, where she lives and her life. She also when we found her, she had what's called a brood patch, which means that on her belly, right down here, all of the feathers were missing. Now, that's what a bird of prey does when they have eggs or babies. They pull all of those feathers out, and that allows those eggs or those babies to be directly against the skin to keep them warm. Mm. So we know she very sadly had eggs or babies. We didn't know where her nest was. We hope that her mate, you know, was able to raise those two. Birds of prey do take turns, you know, and very much like people, even though both parents take a responsibility, there may be a couple where the mother consistently stays on the eggs and the father consistently hunts, or the other way around. One thing that people don't realize, I think, a lot of times with birds of prey is they're called what's called sexually dimorphic, which is a fancy term, which means the girls are always bigger than the boys. Hmm. So, you know, most of our species on our planet, the men are the bigger species. But in birds of prey, the females definitely are larger. With eagles, you can see a tremendous difference. Sometimes you can see a baby eagle sitting next to its father, and you think somebody's photoshopped it because the bird is twice the size of the adult bird.
I noticed when you were talking about, Matilda's feathers being missing and saying you hope that her mate took care of those two. Do they have two eggs at a time typically?
They typically do.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll have three. The food supply has to be very plentiful for three to survive.
I see.
Because at that point, that parent bird is not only hunting for itself, but it's young. And just to give you an idea, we have a baby great horned owl right now that could not go back in the nest. And that bird eats four small rats a night. So that its parent would have to hunt for itself, its sibling, that one, and maybe the mate too. So they catch more rats than you could ever catch with poison. Something that I would like people to realize is that rat poison, concentrates as it goes up the food chain. So if you put out rat poison and a mouse eats the rat, the mouse starts running around erratic. They don't die right away. A rat eats the mouse. A possum eats the rat. An eagle eats the possum, and a panther eats the eagle. Every single one of those animals will die, including the panther.
So obviously the poison through each of those, part of that food chain, I guess I should say, carries through.
And it concentrates
it
as
never,
it goes up.
Never like is lost or sloughed off.
It's one of the things we would like to do. They've done it in the state of California is there's a couple particular kinds of rat poison we would like to try to outlaw in the state of Florida. There's other ways to kill rodents that doesn't affect everything in the food chain.
Let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tune in, my guest is Nancy Murrow, CEO of the Raptor Center of Tampa, which is dedicated to the rehabilitation of injured raptors and other wildlife. The Raptor Center is a key part of the Wonders of Wildlife Festival coming up March 23rd at E.G. Simmons Park in Ruskin. We'll talk with Nancy about that a little bit later. If you'd like to ask Nancy a question or offer a comment in the meantime, please call 813-239-9663. Email DJ at WMNF.org or text 813-433-0885. And if you just did tune in, then I just want to let you know that we are streaming this interview on Facebook Live. So Nancy is in the studio with us, as is Matilda. So you can see those by going to my Facebook page, Duncan Strauss, and checking out our stream there on Facebook Live. In fact, we've got a couple of already two or three emails that have come in. So one of the things about just the chain that the poison follows may tie into one of our emailer questions saying, just wonder why I see so many raptors dead alongside the road.
They're hit by cars. You know, that's the answer in a nutshell. Birds of prey, especially, I could tell you, for an example, yesterday as I went to get on the ramp at I-75 in Brandon, there was a dead possum that was there. And I pulled my car over, got my gloves out, and drug the possum out of the road because there's an eagle's nest fairly close to there. Mm-hmm. And the eagles will come down right in the middle of that road to get that animal. And that's when they get hit. So if for those of us that are, as we say, bird nerds, you know, we stop and take stuff off the road always to prevent anything else from being.
So you're thinking about multiple steps and multiple parts of the food chain. It sounds like, well, for example, the possum story, right? It's like, well, there's a possum, which a lot of us wouldn't be happy to see, but we wouldn't think if I don't move that possum, the eagles that I happen to know are nearby are at risk.
That's correct.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow. We were talking a little bit about falconry and stuff. I'm just curious. I think I heard you speak to someone else from the station about this a moment ago, but did you read H's for Hawk?
I have not read H's for Hawk. We were talking about that prior to the interview.
Yeah.
I did see the TV interview, and certainly, you know, about the woman that's in England that raises a goshawk, and she's a falconer.
Yeah.
And beautiful thing that I saw on TV, but have not read the book yet.
Well, it's an equally beautiful, if not more so, book. It's a memoir about her training the goshawk, but it's sort of also about grief because she's doing it sort of as a way of coping with her very intense grief over her father's sudden death, and there's other literary kind of ruminations that are woven into it. Yeah, it's an amazing book. I was fortunate to speak with her on the show. But anyway, that it does seem to tie into what we're talking about. Also on this show, more than someone like Helen McDonald, I speak with folks who work with dogs and cats and are devoted to their adoption, their welfare. By comparison, it's pretty singular for me to speak with someone whose passion is raptors. So how did you get interested in raptors?
I was joined Audubon and then really just fell in love with the big birds. I had to laugh when you first start noticing how many different kind of birds there are. The raptors are large birds, so they're a little bit easier to identify than little warblers in the tree. And I joined the Eagle Watch program for Audubon, Florida, and then became the coordinator for Eagle Watch here in Hillsborough County and started watching eagles. And I got a call from the Center for Birds of Prey, and they said, one of your baby eagles is on the ground. Could you go pick it up? And I said, wait a second. I thought we were supposed to be watching bald eagles. I didn't know about picking up bald eagles.
Yeah.
So we went, and it was a juvenile. It was only about 9 weeks old, and picked it up. And I thought, wow. Wow, this was really cool. And so then got a call to rescue a hawk and reached up into a tree with my garden gloves on and grabbed the hawk and realized really quickly that wasn't the right thing to do. You need a little bit thicker gloves.
Yeah.
But just really fell in love with the rescue aspect of it. I started working with rehabbers in the areas we took the birds to, and they were really fairly distant. The Audubon Center for Birds of Prey is in Maitland, Florida. That's a 100-mile drive from here. And we also deal with Save Our Seabirds down in Sarasota, 70 miles from Brandon, where I live. And the Avian Reconditioning Center in Apopka. We deal with Florida Wildlife Hospital in Melbourne. And the reality is, as I started really getting into this and just loving these big birds of prey, I realized there's no place that's really close to us where these birds can be reconditioned for flight. So once you have a bird, it's just very much like us laying in bed recovering from a surgery. If you lay in bed too long, your muscles atrophy, and the same thing happens to them if they're sitting on a perch. So we need to put them in large cages to fly. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife dictates how big those cages should be. For a bird this size, a red-tailed hawk, she would need a 60-foot cage for reconditioning. Eagles and ospreys and vultures and peregrine falcons need 100-foot cages. And so we find ourselves, as soon as our birds are ready to go for reconditioning, we're having to drive them these enormous distances. Our volunteers put on between 30 and 40,000 miles a year on their vehicles, actually driving birds to make sure they get the best possible care. And that's why we have to build a raptor center here in the local area so that these birds can immediately be treated and reconditioned and they don't have to make a 200-mile round trip for flight.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about that and the festival that hopefully will help with that effort as well. But you talked a couple different times about how you really took to it and how you really love raptors. But why exactly? What do you love about them?
I love the way that they're very majestic. I love the way that they hunt. And it's one of the birds that, and my family would tell you, if you ask me which one's my favorite, it's whichever one is in front of me at the time. But I think they're majestic and I just absolutely love them.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of flying, so we've already established that Matilda that's here with you can't be released. She was shot and the injuries, I guess, were so significant that's just not a prospect. But when she's not here in a studio at WMNF, but she's back where she normally is, can she fly and does she fly?
She cannot fly. She can fly very short distances. She can get up onto a perch that's about 4.5 feet off the ground.
Okay, because that's just a measure of how kind of impaired she was by the gunshots.
Correct. Yeah. She doesn't have lift. She doesn't really have the power with her wings to do that. And she's been in captivity now for a period of time. So
yeah. So is that also then like a skill? I mean, not just because her muscles probably have an atrophy the way you said if she weren't exercised by people like you or someone else. Mm-hmm. But is it also a skill that over time a bird like that loses if they're not flying? They kind of aren't as deft about flying.
If they have the ability to fly. Mm-hmm. Then they are required legally to be in a larger cage.
Okay.
So they can fly. Yeah. And we do put perches up high for them so that they can get up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And they like to sit up high.
Right.
Just like they would in the wild.
But I mean, I misunderstood you, but I thought you were saying about Matilda, even though, again, her injuries are so significant, she doesn't have the lift you say that would normally be required. But is it also that over time, in that kind of situation, a bird just loses their sort of skill or ability to fly that they otherwise had at one point?
She physically doesn't have the ability to fly. I think they always have the desire to fly.
Okay, yeah.
I don't think that ever goes away. I think that when they're looking off in the distance and looking up in the sky, they're wishing they could be there.
All right, well, let's take another one of our emailer questions. And actually, you know what? There's somebody that's been holding for a while that I probably should get involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals, Nancy Murrah.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, please. Did you have a question or a comment?
I'm in St. Pete. I just had a question. What are vultures considered?
Vultures are considered birds of prey, although, interestingly, they don't kill things with their feet like most birds of prey. But in the categories, they are considered a raptor or a bird of prey.
Would you guys work on them?
Yes, we do.
Oh, that's interesting, because they're such a foul, nasty bird.
If you work with them, they're not a foul, nasty bird at all. They're one of the smartest birds we work with. They instantly seem to be able to understand that you're helping them. And if they became non-releasable, it's not uncommon for us to be able to have that bird eating out of our hand within 48 hours.
Do they kill prey or they only feast upon already dead prey?
No, they prefer, as I say, fresh dead prey. They don't want something that's been laying there for 5 days. They want something that's recently been killed. But their purpose in nature is to prevent the spread of disease by eliminating dead animals from our environment.
Well, I was on a kayak and I went under a roosting Hello?
We're here. Go ahead.
Still there?
Yeah.
And they just, the smell was overwhelmingly bad, so I thought it was because of what they were eating.
Well, they do eat things that are deceased, so you could take that into consideration, but they also, their bodies have digestive juices that allow them to to digest that. And they have a very distinct smell to them. I will be honest with you, so does an osprey, and so does an eagle, and so does a caracara. There's a lot of birds that have, woodpeckers smell like butter. So it's you know, a lot of birds have very distinct smells, and vultures certainly are one of them.
All right, thanks for your call. We're going to move on. Thank you so much. Nancy, how many, in your sphere at least, how many raptors are rehabilitated in a given year?
We rehabilitate about 600.
Oh my goodness!
In a given year, so
even with all the logistical challenges of all those drives and to
yes,
the
yes, and on top of that, probably another 600 variety of, whether that be waterbird, songbird, baby squirrels, possums. You mentioned that not wanting to see a possum. Possum will eat everything in your yard you don't like: ticks, fleas, roaches, rats.
Oh, I like seeing mice. Live possums. I just your story was about the dead possum, on the side of the road.
But we also, I never thought I'd see the day that I'd say of all those little baby mammals, possums are my favorite, but they are.
Yeah.
They're just adorable. And of course, our only marsupial in the United States. So we do a topping about 1,100 animals and birds.
Wow. Let's get to another email question. My family lives on a few acres and we have a lot of squirrels and mosquitoes. I wanted to get a bat house to help with the mosquitoes and was thinking about getting an owl box to help with the squirrels. Will the owls eat the bats? Which owl would be best to eat yard squirrels?
The owls will eat the bats, but I wouldn't deter, I wouldn't say that would deter me from putting up a bat house maybe on one part of the property and the owl house on the other. Bat houses have to be placed in exactly the right place, and the bats have to choose that place to come to. So bats eat over 3,000 mosquitoes a night. That certainly is going to help your mosquito problem. And as far as the squirrels go, your daytime hawks will probably also, work to take care of that. It just depends on what kind of owls you have in the neighborhood of whether they, the owls are not going to go after the squirrels. Squirrels are out in the day. The owls are out at night.
Great. Okay, we're going to get to some more questions. We've got a couple callers and some other email questions. But what are the most common injuries that bring that many raptors to your attention each year?
The collisions with, whether that be a window, a house, a pool cage, collisions with cars. The collisions with power lines are the third leading cause of mortality for these large birds of prey. They can get into a variety of things. We get them shot. We get them hung up on barbed wire fences. We get them stuck in buildings, falling in grease pits, falling in sewer pits. Trying to think of some of the other things. The most common are hit by cars, running into power lines, and running into things in general, especially your the Cooper's hawks that we have, or your falcons chase birds that are flying. So sometimes if they, especially a young one, miscalculates, it'll run into a building and, sustain a head injury. So this is a variety of different reasons. We had a cormorant come in last night probably a turtle bit its foot. I'm not sure, but so just, a variety of fishing line entanglement.
Yeah. Let me let folks know again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Nancy Murrah, CEO of the Raptor Center of Tampa Bay, which is dedicated to the rehabilitation of the injured raptors and other wildlife in Tampa Bay. If you'd like to join the conversation, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. And again, a reminder, we're streaming this conversation on Facebook Live. You can find it on my personal page, Duncan Strauss, and we've got Matilda the Hawk here as part of our conversation. So it sounds like, if I follow you, about the center now, that it's sort of an amorphous operation that doesn't have its own facility, or it kind of does, but you just need something bigger that would then make it unnecessary to travel to those other places.
We need about 8 acres of land. We want to build a facility to rehabilitate birds of prey with 14 flight cages so that we don't have to ever switch birds out or have birds waiting to get into flight. And we also want a part of that to be a conservation education center. So we are operating currently out of my house and a couple other facilities. And our goal is to get 5 to 8 acres of land and build a facility here locally.
What are the steps in that process? Just raising the money first, or how, or have you located like the plot of land that you think, oh, well, that's the one, if we had the dough, that's what we'd get right there?
Certainly we've located that. We've also have been working we worked with Hillsborough County. They offered us a piece of land. It turned out it wasn't the right piece for us, and so we had to turn that down, sadly. So that, you know, hurt.
That's a tough one.
And we've gone to one of the corporations that is local in the area that is a large landowner, and we're currently waiting for their decision of whether they will give us land. So we have looked at land. We know that there's land out there that if we could raise enough money that we could afford to buy it. And that would, you know, allow us to do exactly what we want to do, as opposed to leasing land from a corporation that may have some restrictions.
So once you get the land that will work, then the idea would be to build the facility that would have those flight cages, et cetera.
Really, to take it in three stages is to acquire the land and fence the land and start to operate maybe out of a construction trailer or trailer type, you know, a temporary arrangement.
Right.
And to start to build those flight cages that we desperately need and larger rehabilitation mews. And then once we have that piece of the organization up and running, we would like to then build a large clinic and facility that is open to the public and dedicated to education.
So once the third phase were completed, not only would you not, I then think, have any reason or need to go to those other places that people are putting all those miles on their car, but would you actually then ultimately be able to care for more birds than you are in a given year now?
Yes, we would. And we would also be able to help other rehabbers that are in the area that are operating like us. To be able to use our flight cages.
All right, well, I'm going to take another call or two, and then we're going to talk more about the festival before we run out of time, since that's pivotal to helping raise some money for the exact effort we're talking about. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Nancy Murrow. Do you have a question or a comment? Hello, are you there?
Hello.
Hi. Question or comment for Nancy?
This is Stan up in the Zephyr Hills. We have a lot of those birds around here. I was wondering, how do they tell each other as far as male or female? Is it the size? Is there something... You know, in their calls, or, you know, how do they tell each other apart?
They can see on a different spectrum than we can see. They can see a little bit different, more, you know, ultraviolet light than we can. So there's some speculation there may be some coloration difference in the feathers that we can't see. But the females are larger than the males. And I think just like people, I think like birds can't maybe tell whether we're boy or girl people. I think that birds can tell each other apart, whether that just be size, call, and just their very nature, you know. So they can see things a little differently than we do.
I remember a documentary where they had put cameras around this eagle's nest and this, you know, repetitive breeding pair that came every year to use the nest. Well, the female died, and they didn't know whether, you know, the male was abandoned the nest or not, and apparently he went out, and, you know, I don't know, an hour or so later he came back with a female, and everybody went, oh, she's got the spots on the face, you know, and you know, it's really interesting, but she knew what to do and everything, and you know, they bred, and you know, they had eggs, and the chicks survived. It was really amazing.
Well, eagles certainly, and ospreys will do the same thing. If they lose their mate, especially if they witness their mate being killed, they will call in another mate to help them raise their chicks. And you know, they live to be quite, especially eagles will live to be 28 or 30 years old, and you might have a 20-year-old female, and the her mate gets killed, and she's going to take a 5-year-old male. She's going to take a male that's just come into sexual maturity, that's looking for a mate, and just say, hey, come on over here. I already got a ready-made home. And interestingly enough, if you really look at eagle's nests over time that have been there, is then, of course, he's going to live longer than her. So when she passes away, guess what he's going to do? He's going to go find a 5-year-old.
Wow.
So so you can have these large eagle nests where multiple generations of eagles actually live there.
Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
So, Nancy, let's talk a little bit. We're just going to still try to work in some phone calls and some of our email questions as time permits. But let's talk for sure for a moment or two about the Wonders of Wildlife Festival. So, first of all, that's March 23rd. It's at E.G. Simmons Park in Ruskin. And while we can't really talk about the ticket price, although we can say that there is one, because, again, the idea is to help raise funds for the effort to get the rehabilitation center and the whole facility kind of build or help finance that. What will happen there? What would people attending that expect to see or do?
Well, we have all kinds of fun things that surround wildlife. We have EarthQuest, there's a gentleman named Steve Hoddy, and he is coming, and we will have two shows at 11 and 2 where he'll be free-flying large birds of prey. He also will have with him an Andean condor, which is the largest bird of prey in the world. She has about a 12-foot wingspan, and so she will be there. And then there will be a variety of other people that are involved in wildlife and rehabilitating wildlife in the area, and they will also be bringing live animals. There will be Erwin the alligator will be there.
Wow.
So you can meet the alligator. There will be bats there. There will be skunks. There will be snakes and a variety of birds of prey, face painting. We have a really good food vendor. We didn't do the food truck route. We have a really good food vendor that's going to have some great food. We have a singing along with Erica for her awesome animal songs.
Okay.
So we have a sing-along, and there is a variety of activities that kids can do, making masks and arts and crafts, and just in general have a real good time and be able to be up close and personal with these animals. I think, as you mentioned, you see them in the sky and you know that they're majestic, but when you have the opportunity to be right next to one, it's really quite something.
For sure. So I guess if you wanted to find out more, first of all, the Raptor Center's website is raptorcenteroftampa.org, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they could go there. I don't know if there's a Facebook event page or a Facebook
thing
about
that. There is a Facebook event page for the Wonders of Wildlife Festival.
Okay, so just search for that Wonders of Wildlife Festival and get your details about the, again, it's March 23rd, so you have time to plan and make your arrangements to head out to this. So, and again, the proceeds do go to the Raptor Center of Tampa Bay and those efforts to get this facility that we want to get happening so they can stop doing those crazy commutes.
That's right. Come out and help the birds.
Yeah. So one quick thing, too, I was going to ask at the end, but we're getting towards the end, and one of our emailers actually asked the same question. In fact, this is Don, who is our Greyhound correspondent, but he's asking basically, and the same question I had is, what's involved if people wanted to become a volunteer at the Raptor Center of Tampa Bay? What would they need to do?
You could go to our website, the raptorcenteroftampa.org, and there's a page that says support, and list all kinds of volunteer opportunities. And we have a variety of opportunities from working with the birds, just like you see me doing, certainly all of the support and cleaning that takes place, for the organization. We need a lot of help until we get the center built, driving birds around, from place to place, and help with social media, help with kids' activities. We do a free program for children, the third Friday of every month, geared towards homeschooled kids. And so we always need help with that. And so even if you never wanted to touch a bird, we certainly could use your help.
Yeah, well, it sounds like there's plenty of opportunities, and whatever you're interested in or have any kind of skills in, they could definitely use your help. And so with Matilda, watching her, and again, she's been very patient, and I'm just going to assure you, Matilda, we're almost at the end. How is she like when you talked about, for example, at the Wonders of Wildlife Festival, people getting up close and seeing how majestic? Like, how is she like with school kids? Like, if I don't know if you go to classes or places where school kids are gathered, how are she or some of the other birds like that?
We choose the birds based on their personality of where we take them.
Yeah.
She's really good with kids. She can be with 2-year-olds or she can be with high school kids, and she behaves just like she is right now.
Wow.
We have other birds that are a little more skittish, and so smaller kids that move fast tend to make them nervous.
Okay.
Your falcons are so cued in visually. They hunt while they're flying. They actually catch other birds while they're flying, most falcons do, so that they're so cued visually that a lot of movement in a room a lot of times will bother them.
Mm.
So for little kids, you might not see taking out the peregrine falcon that we have.
Right.
You would
Matilda.
See more like Matilda.
Yeah. Okay, and speaking of Matilda, one of our emailers says, please ask Nancy if this is a red-tailed or red-shouldered hawk. I live in Bloomingdale, and these hawks have their nest on our street. I would like to know for sure.
This is a red-tailed hawk.
Okay.
Your red-shouldered hawk is going to have a black and white striped tail. She has a red tail.
Okay.
A rusty color.
And that's hence the name, probably, yeah.
Yeah, she has broken her tail a couple times. She's getting ready to get a new tail.
All right, we have barely time for one more question, but I'm going to try to take one more question. Hi, caller, you're on with Nancy. We have just very brief time. Do you have a quick question or comment?
Yes, I just wanted to mention a website that I've followed for the last 3 years of a pair of nesting eagles in North Fort Myers, the southwest Florida eagle, sponsored by a real estate company down there. But it's fascinating. Their cameras, they have several cameras, and I've followed for the last 3 years, and it's fascinating to watch. They're on 24 hours a day. The cameras are incredible.
If you've watched them for the last 3 years, you understand the drama that exists in their life for those particular birds.
Absolutely. It's pretty amazing. It really is. They have two young ones now that are getting old. They come in October, rebuild the nest, have their eggs in December, and then the young ones hatch and they leave towards the end of May.
Right. That's October 1st to May 15th every year is bald eagle nesting season in Florida.
But it's really something to watch if anybody interested in watching.
Okay, can you quickly give us that website, and then we're going to unfortunately have to run.
It's called Southwestern Florida Eagle.
Southwestern Florida
Eagle. Southwest Florida Eagle.
Oh, Southwest Florida Eagles.
Right.
Okay. Yes. Cool. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I think I've seen that before, but I had forgotten about that website. So thank you very much for your call.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. And thank you, Nancy. I think we have just about reached the end of our time. But again, we've been speaking to Nancy, and we've been seeing and sometimes hearing and some flapping, etc., from Matilda. And again, they're from the Raptor Center of Tampa Bay. The website is theraptorcenteroftampabay.org. The Wonders of Wildlife Festival, again, is coming up March 23rd at E.G. Simmons Park in Ruskin. And you can find that out, again, at the website, or there's a Facebook event page for Wonders of Wildlife Festival. Nancy, thank you so much. And Matilda, thank you very much.
We thank you for having us, Duncan.
Absolutely. In a few moments, I'll talk with Susanna Arneson of the Humane Society of the Nature Coast about efforts underway to expand their facility to help more animals. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. And after this conversation with Nancy, I thought it'd be enormously fitting to hear a comedy piece about a raptor, a falcon in this case. This is Andy Ritchie with a piece called Balthazar in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
This is funny, though. Somebody in my neighborhood a couple weeks ago posted a sign on a telephone pole for a lost falcon. Like the bird. They're like, we lost our falcon, help us. I'm like, I can't, I'm not the Beastmaster. I can't summon wildlife from the skies. Like if you lose your dog and you post a sign, like, yeah, there's a chance you get your dog back, but if you lose your falcon, it's gone, dude. Forever, because it can fly and it hates you. It's not going to be hanging out in the woods one day like, God damn it, I really miss that hood. Nobody puts a hood on me out here that makes me think I'm asleep. That sucks. It's like, these people are never going to get their falcon back. But it's like, well, maybe they'll get their falcon back. Because they're very smart. When they made the poster, they put a picture of the falcon on the poster. Yeah, which is very helpful if you're the one looking for it, right? Because that way you don't show up at their doorstep with the wrong falcon. I think we've all been there before. It's incredibly embarrassing. For all three parties involved, really. Falcon's just like, oh, this is not my house. I don't know why the falcon's Jewish in this joke, but it's a Yiddish falcon. And then underneath the picture, they put the falcon's name, Balthazar. And there was a $300 reward for him, too. I guess they're really expensive. So I'm like, whatever. I got nothing better to do this afternoon. I start walking up and on my block like, Balthazar! Balthazar! People are giving me spare change. Poor kid's touched in the head.
That was the late, great Andy Ritchie with a piece called Balthazar, taken from his album King Ding-a-Ling. Now it's time to speak with Susanna Arneson of the Humane Society of the Nature Coast. This is indeed Susanna Arneson on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Susanna.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
For sure. So let's start with a quick overview of the Humane Society of the Nature Coast. When was it established and where exactly is it located?
So we are about 50 years old from its conception, and we're located in Brooksville, Florida. We're off of Westcon and Mobley. If you're familiar with the area, we're right near the Brooksville exit off the Veterans Expressway.
Okay, cool. And describe the challenges you're facing in terms of space and resources at this point.
So just in general, there is an overpopulation of animals. We are doing the best we can with what we have. We currently have 17 kennels for dogs, and we can have anywhere between 40 to 50 cats. 50 is really uncomfortable, but if we have to, we have to, that type of situation.
Yeah.
So we are 6 weeks out from owner surrender, so people that can no longer keep their pets due to moving or hospitalization or just age, they would come to us and they would allow us to take over their animal and rehome them. We currently are 6 weeks out to be able to even see their animal for evaluation. We are out of room. So a lot of times when we let them know that, the next day we find them either tied to a tree in front of our shelter or literally dumped on the other side of the fence. So when we open it up, there we have two cats, a dog, you know, whatever it is that that they're trying to essentially get us to have. The county is also full. So it's definitely an issue in our area. So we're really trying to push getting our building phase two to be able to almost triple the capacity for our dogs.
Wow.
Our phase one to triple the capacity for cats is on its way. We're in the bidding process at this point and pushing through permits, but we're hoping to break ground in April.
Well, that sounds pretty ambitious and pretty exciting and obviously pretty necessary from what you've described.
Absolutely.
What is the fundraising campaign as you get those plans and other things hopefully approved and can move forward? But what are the measures you're taking to finance this?
So we have, really, we have a few major fundraisers throughout the year. One of them being our golf tournament that's coming up here this month on the 28th at Southern Hills. And we're hoping to raise some major funds. That way we can put it towards our phase two and get that almost simultaneously done with phase one. So that's our big one coming up. All our information is either on our Facebook page, which is the Humane Society of the Nature Coast, as well as our website, which is www.humanerescue.org. And so you can go to either site and find out about those.
Yeah, well, that's great. And again, well, we can't talk about the fee to get in on the golf thing. It is, you know, sounds like a great afternoon with a great purpose. And,
yeah.
And again,
and there's something for everybody. So there's volunteer opportunities. You can donate raffle tickets or raffle items. So there's all ways that you can actually, you know, be involved in, you know, raising capital for that. It's not just for golfers.
For sure. So you can do that. And again, if you're just busy that day or not a golfer or just not inclined to participate that day that way, you could, of course, just still go to the website. And I love that the website is humanerescue.org. I mean, that you can't really get a better phrase than that, but people could go there and just donate just because they want to help the campaign to expand the facilities to just help that many more cats and dogs.
Exactly. So, and if you wanted to call us as well, I know sometimes, you know, websites can be kind of daunting, confusing. We also can take that over the phone as well.
Great. And what's that number, Susanna?
Our number at the shelter is area code 352-796.
Mm-hmm.
2711.
So 352-796-2711. Okay, great. So we can either go website, humanerescue.org, you can go to Facebook, or you can call 352-796-2711 and help out and just make it easier for them to care for more animals and find more homes for those animals that need it. So
absolutely.
Great. Well, Susanna, thank you so much for taking some time to fill us in on this, and good luck with the golf tournament and just the overall campaign and the expansion plans.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Take care. Coming up, we have our, not quite sure, in fact, what's happening at 11, but Nola Lalay is here. So he will be on with Midpoint at noon. And John Gilmore, I believe, will be presiding over executive session after that. Then the music kicks back in at 2 p.m. with Scott Elliott, who is back. He was back last week. It's sort of a cool surprise. And I think is back on an ongoing basis, hosting All Souls edition of It's the Music starting at 2 p.m. So great news. I'm so great to see him over the weekend at the Gasparilla Music Festival. He looked great. So happy to be amongst all his friends and, of course, hearing great music. And they'll be playing great music today starting at 2 p.m. So, meanwhile, on this show, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a DVD copy of Blackfish. So, Name That Animal Tune is a giveaway, but please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. Well, again, the prize will be a DVD copy of Blackfish, a great movie to own and watch periodically or to show to people, of course. So to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song by a band that's coming to town, as a further hint, within the next week or so. Let's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals on WMNF. If we have anybody that can want to name that animal tune, we'll probably take that off the air because we have reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. Again, next week I will be away, but Bev Capshaw will be here, so that's fantastic. Yay. I invite you to visit talkinganimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, Instagram, the whole nine yards. Follow me on Twitter. Any and all those would be great. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Duncan Strauss. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. NPR News headlines is next. WMNF Tampa.